This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldst.louis.com. Here on the final day of March, I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, and Ian Geiser here with me. And now Max Foisy joins us, Max on Movies, for our showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Max. How are you?
Hello there, Paul. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me yet another week. I keep waiting for that Friday when you say, nah.
No, that'll
so
never
thank
happen.
You for having me in.
What do you think this is, a radio station where you come in on Friday and that would be your last show and they would tell you afterwards? No.
Oh, wait a
minute. No, that wouldn't happen. I would. I'm a much nicer boss than that. I would text you.
Nice. Don't bother.
Yeah, don't bother.
On Friday morning. No, we're having a great time here.
It's been fun. Last week was a whole lot of fun, and this week I don't think you have any movies.
No, the burden's really on you today. That's why I can't fire you. No,
it's really kind of too bad because you see more of the daytime screenings, which for my schedule I can't go to, and I'd love hearing your take on those films.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to go to any screenings this week, but you've got two movies that are opening this weekend, each of which appeal to different audiences, and each of which I would guess the studios are looking at it as, you know, this is a big springtime tentpole movie for them. One of them is an animated movie with Alec Baldwin doing the lead voice in The Boss Baby, and the other one is Scarlett Johansson, which Alec Baldwin's not involved in at all, in Ghost in the Shell.
Which is based on an animated film, so you have some sort of connection.
Oh, okay. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with The Boss Baby, because it's a lot less controversial than Ghost in the Shell. There's a lot to unpack there with Ghost in the Shell, which we can get to, but The Boss Baby... You know, it's funny, I didn't think about this, but before our earlier show, The Inside with John Grayson, before that started today, our board op...
John Grayson is here?
He just started.
Wow.
Yeah, today was his first day.
Wow.
Brady said, should me and my friends, he's in his 20s, should we go see Boss Baby? Because he saw one of the ads that had sort of a riff on Glengarry Glen Ross, and he thought, oh, this will be like a movie that we can get into as well as grown-ups, mm-hmm. almost like a Moana or a Kubo. And I told him no. I said, this is definitely for the 10 and under set, which is fine.
Okay, well, you have a son who's 10 and under.
He's 6, and I took him. And to give you an idea of where the Boss Baby sits... after the movie was over, I said to Oscar, who's 6, I said, what did you think of The Boss Baby? And he goes, you know what my favorite part was, Dad? And I said, what's that? And he goes, when the Boss Baby tooted.
Oh, I got to go.
Well, that's the thing. If bodily humor is your jam, then yes, The Boss Baby is for you. And you know what? I'm fine with animated movies that are for kids. As great as the Pixar films are, I think sometimes animated films can be too much for adults.
Yep.
And something like Inside Out, which is an amazing film, it's way better for me than it is for Oscar. Uh-huh. Because it's talking about identity and choice. And you know. Whereas Boss Baby is almost like Minions. Now, back when the Despicable Me movies came out, those are movies that adults can like too, and I think they're fine and kind of funny. But the Minions movie was just for little kids. It was just fart jokes and just all, you know, and the kids loved it. And so I read so many reviews from critics saying, oh, what it was, well, it's a movie for kids. Mm-hmm. Let kids enjoy their dumb humor. So that's what Boss Baby does. I'm going to tell you a bit about the premise, and you're all going to scratch your head and roll your eyes at the same time. This will happen later today when I do the premise for Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
For a completely different reason.
All right.
In this movie, babies come from Baby Co. I don't know if Heaven is Baby Co. or if Heaven contains a Baby Co.
It's a division of Amazon.
Exactly.
We get everything now.
I would not be surprised.
This is why retail babies are out.
Right. It's all direct sales now.
Right.
So in Baby Co., when the babies are created, if they say goo goo gaga, then they are born. They are sent to the planet, and parents get them, and that's sort of like the version of getting the baby from the stork.
Stork, yeah.
If the baby wants nothing to do with goo goo gaga, then they put a business suit on him and they or her, and they give them special milk that does not allow them to grow up, and thus the babies are in charge of Baby Co. I did not write this screenplay. I want to tell everybody.
Okay.
Is this a true story?
It is a true story, Dan. This is where babies come from.
Okay. And now, let me just stop you right there, because you've seen the movie, and I have a question since I haven't seen it.
Yes.
The babies who are given a suit and don't grow up,
yes.
are they assigned parents?
No, they never get to grow up. They never get parents because I don't know if this is a glitch within Baby Co or maybe a necessary evil, but they come fully adult-minded. They look like babies, but they come out like, let's go, where's the coffee, let's run a business.
Okay. Oh, like so a few radio people we know.
So this boss baby, and he's given a name later on, but he's pretty much just the boss baby. He's Alec Baldwin, and if the movie works at all for an adult, it's only because Alec Baldwin does the voice.
A question again, if you don't mind.
Mm. No.
Pardon my interruption, but...
Interrupt as much as you want.
The babies never get old. These boss babies.
Yes.
Why do you need new boss babies?
Well,
Do the old boss babies die?
Baby Co. looks pretty infinite. Like, maybe there's lots of divisions in Baby Co. It's set in the clouds. Who's in charge of Baby Co.? I don't know. Again, I didn't write the screenplay. I don't know. Okay. And you'll have more questions in a moment.
All right.
But Alec Baldwin is, you know, the whole gag is baby in a suit. That's it. That's the whole. I'm sure that was the pitch when the producers or the writers came in. They said baby in a suit, and sure enough, that's funny. I know it's very basic, but it is funny. And to hear Alec Baldwin's, you know, very grown up voice come out of the baby, it is funny. Sure. But that's the one gag, and they keep, you know, throwing it out there. So the boss baby, he is in a battle with his rivals at Puppy Co. You see, Puppy Co. is where puppies come from.
Are there puppies in suits?
The puppies, no. It's run by a human. Very strange. But the puppies are getting all the love in the world.
Oh.
And so the babies are concerned that the parents won't want babies anymore if they can just have a puppy instead, and there's a finite amount of love in the world, and so the babies have to fight back. Once again, I want to point out, I had nothing to do with the writing the screenplay. I am but a reporter.
Okay.
As
a divorced man, Dan, can you confirm there's a finite amount of love in the world?
Oh, sure. There is.
So the boss, that's based on a true story.
Yes.
So the boss baby is sent to the planet to masquerade as a little brother so he can take down Puppy Co. Now, this doesn't sit too well with a 7-year-old named Tim. He is our lead character. Interestingly enough, Tim is voiced by Miles Bakshi, who is the grandson of Ralph Bakshi, who is the animation giant from the 70s.
Heavy metal.
Fritz the Cat, Heavy Fritz Metal, Cat, yeah. Lord of the Rings, Fire and Ice. I mean, just amazing works. And so this is his grandkid doing the voice in this, which is kind of cool.
I think Ralph Bakshi invented rotoscoping.
Yes, exactly. Yes, right, which he used on Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So for an animation nut, that's kind of cool to have his grandkid here. And the grandkid does a great job. It's much better to hear a young actor doing a voice than it is just hiring an Alec Baldwin. And I say that with all due respect to Alec Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie, from there, it goes on to become a movie about sibling rivalry. It's this older brother who hates his younger brother because he's now the boss of the family. And if anybody's had a baby, you know that the bosses are the babies. What I liked about the movie was the storyline is not a young hero trying to go out on a quest and prove they're the chosen one, which is every animated film or Harry Potter film or Hunger Games film that we've had for the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not the hero's journey, which I like. It's just about getting along with your younger brother. Now, the movie does raise some questions in universe that never really make sense. For instance, if they can topple Puppy Co., then Boss Baby goes back to Baby Co., right? But what wouldn't his parents know that he was there, right? They try to explain this with a Men in Black kind of like, you forget the baby, you forget the baby, magic wand.
Like a little flashy thing?
Oh, my Lord. That's when I'm like, there's no logic in this movie. But again, my 6-year-old son doesn't care about any of that.
Uh-huh.
He enjoyed the animation, which is pretty fun. The kid's got a big imagination in the movie. So when he's playing pirates, you actually see pirates and stuff, which is something you can do in animation, not live action. So I liked that about it, too. Voice works fine. Where it falls down, the reason why I can't really recommend it for any kind of adults is it's just not funny. It's a bunch of bodily humor gags that don't do anything for me. But if you have kids under 10, it's a fine weekend at the movies.
Or if you're Dan Strauss.
Or if you're Dan Strauss.
I love bodily humor.
You might like this movie. Yeah.
I love that.
But you know, it's one of those middle of the road movies that I didn't hate and I certainly didn't love. But it's if you have younger kids, it's fine.
So 0 to 10?
You know, I'll give this one a 5, dead in the middle. Okay. It is completely average.
Okay.
The Boss Baby, completely average.
Higher if you have younger kids.
Absolutely. Okay. I think Oscar would probably give it about a 7 or an 8.
All right. Now, I have to ask you about the voice people in this, because they're all the 5 main voices in this, except for the kid, are all well-known people. You got Alec Baldwin. Mm-hmm. You got Steve Buscemi.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Kimmel. Lisa Kudrow, they play the dad and the mom, and Tobey Maguire, who plays the narrator of this.
It's Tim when he's grown up.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, this is the thing I ask, not just about this movie, but about pretty much every big studio animated movie today, which is, why do you need those people, those names to do this? because I know people in the animated voice world. I have a friend who directs and writes animated stuff, cartoons for TV, and he has a cast of people who are all very well known in that world, but you wouldn't know the names of any of them.
Sure.
And he works with them because they're all incredibly talented and can do, you know, each one of them could do 25 different voices. You know, it's like the cast of The Simpsons. Nobody knew who those people were. Today, most people still don't know.
Yeah.
Who the people are who do The Simpsons. There's no star involved there. Why does Hollywood still insist on hiring these people who don't come cheap and paying them so much money when they are not a draw? No one is taking their kid to see The Boss Baby because the voice is done by Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, your son doesn't know that was Alec Baldwin's voice.
I asked that very question to James Arnold Taylor, who is a voice artist who's done amazing stuff. He was Obi-Wan Kenobi in The Clone Wars. He did Marty McFly for a couple of video games. I love voice actors as well. There's a couple of great documentaries on Netflix about what they do. And I asked him that. And he was talking about how tough it is to get certain gigs now. But he said people blame Disney, but it wasn't Disney at the start of this. It was the offshoot companies. It was the competitors like DreamWorks with Shrek, and it was The Road to El Dorado and Madagascar, which was directed by the same person who did Boss Baby. They thought, well, who's going to go see this Madagascar movie? Let's hire Chris Rock. People know his voice. People think it's funny. And then Disney started going that way. But for most of their princesses and most of their stuff, they haven't had big names.
Yeah.
With Boss Baby, with Alec Baldwin, I think that he's the reason why the movie works. So hiring him makes sense because it's kind of an extra gag for parents to look at. It's Alec Baldwin. Tobey Maguire, Lisa Kudrow, and Jimmy Kimmel. You and I, Paul, on today's show have said more words than they say in the entire movie.
Wow.
Toby kind of does an intro, then his voice does not come back. Jimmy Kimmel says, "Hi, I'm the dad," and that's about it. They are really not in this movie. Buscemi does more, but he's also, thanks to Pixar, he's been sort of the go-to villain in cartoons, you know, for a long time now. But I completely agree.
Probably promotion, I would imagine. You can say this movie has these names in it.
And maybe you get them to go out on Fallon. And
you can do junkets and things like that.
You know, when Frozen came out, Kristen Bell was Princess Anna. She's by no means a household name, but she was able to go on Conan O'Brien and Letterman and talk about it. That wasn't why that movie was huge, though. It was huge because Let It Go is a great song, and Idina Menzel sang it perfectly.
Yes.
So I completely agree. I would like to see animation get back to actual voice artists doing work. That's one of the reasons why I think the kid did such a great job, and he's got animation in his blood because his grandpa is Bakshi.
Yeah. The documentary that Max referred to is called I Know That Voice. Came out in 2013. It's available now on DVD and probably on some of the streaming services. It is great because you get to see these people who you don't know standing there in front of a microphone and creating characters. Yeah, the word may have been written down on the page, but until it gets into that person's head and they create the voice and the attitude for that character with the help of the writers and the directors and the animators, all that sort of stuff, it can't be as good as it is until they get involved. So you won't know any of the stars of this movie, but you should go check it out if you can. It's called I Know That Voice.
It's a great documentary.
Find it now. Okay, so a 5 out of 10 for The Boss Baby. And then the other one that's opening this weekend is Ghost in the Shell, which stars Scarlett Johansson in a movie that I have not seen, but just based on the commercials for it, should be called Lucy 2.
Sure. It is an interesting amalgamation of her work in Lucy, but also her art house film Under the Skin. If you saw that, I'm a big, big fan of that movie. It's a very strange film that has very little dialogue, and it raises questions about identity and personality and consent. And it's just an incredible film. All of those themes and issues are also in this movie with the high gloss action movie slick of Lucy.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, and you can explain what the movie's about, and we'll get into it, and there's a little bit of a controversy about this movie. So we'll do all that as we continue with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Max all here with me to talk movies. And Max has already given The Boss Baby a 5 out of 10. He says more points for the younger your child is. Under 10-year-old kids will probably enjoy it, but for adults, not so much. So that's why it gets that middling score. The other big movie that's opening this weekend is Scarlett Johansson in Ghost in the Shell, which just looks like a special effects action movie.
It is.
With her in a wig and a Very, very, very tight bodysuit. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No. All of that is accurate.
Okay. So what is this movie about?
Well, it's based on a Japanese animation film from the mid-90s, otherwise known as an anime film. It was also called Ghost in the Shell. It's one of the more popular ones. Back in the 90s when anime was really starting to become popular, I thought to myself, okay, I'll rent a couple of these from my local video store, because that's what we did before we had to stream things, and I'll give it a shot. So I watched Akira, and I watched Ghost in the Shell, and Vampire Hunter D, Princess Mononoke, and I completely lost interest.
Yeah,
I realized that genre, that art form, was not for me. Akira is a pretty amazing spectacle. Mononoke completely lost me, and I know the people who are listening who love that film are really angry. Ghost in the Shell I found pretty dense. There's not a lot of dialogue, so it's a little harder to figure out what's going on. But that was 20-some years ago when I watched those movies. So before I saw the screening of this live-action version, I decided to see if I could find it. It is actually streaming on Hulu. So if you have Hulu, you can watch the original version, which I did the night before, and it all came flooding back. I'm glad that I watched them back to back, because it really kind of helps me juxtapose those two experiences together. This is kind of the exact opposite of what happened when Disney did the live action version of Beauty and the Beast, which is they tacked on about 30 extra minutes. They filled in some story gaps, and in my estimation, that the live action movie in some respects is actually better than the animated film. With this live action Ghost in the Shell, you're sitting here going, wow, I'm really surprised that we've reached a point in special effects and in CG that we could recreate some of these iconic shots from that animated film. But then you're left asking yourself, why? Because instead of adding to the story, they've streamlined it pretty succinctly to make it more of just your standard action film, which is too bad, because that first movie has a lot of interesting themes that we've seen since then in other science fiction films. Another problem that I think Ghost in the Shell is going to have finding a big audience is Japanese animation is typically something that you watch at 3 o'clock in the morning with your buddies when you're about 25. And it's a niche thing for a niche audience. It plays great with midnight movies, you know, and I know that Ghost in the Shell played at the Tivoli midnight movies a couple years ago. To be at a matinee at a big multiplex at noon with Scarlett Johansson, it's just a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because it still has that dense, sort of impenetrable, hard science fiction element to it. As far as what the story is about, well, you have this person who is what they call a ghost in the shell, which is when you have your spirit or your soul or your ghost that has been transplanted and your brain has been put into a cybernetic body. So we don't know who Scarlett Johansson used to be. We just know that now she looks like Scarlett Johansson. This is where the controversy comes in. In that original anime, the shell that she's in didn't look particularly Asian, but of course it's Japanese animated movie and all the cast and characters are Japanese. So when Rinko Kikuchi or somebody else was not cast in this main role, people got all been out of shape.
They used the phrase whitewashing.
Yes, exactly, which we've heard a few times recently, and I think that diversity is important. I think representation on screen is very important, too, but I also think we have to choose our battles to make sure we're coming from the best point of argument.
All right, let me ask you a question. Is the character Scarlett Johansson plays a Japanese woman?
The character that Scarlett Johansson plays originally is a Japanese woman who is put into a Caucasian shell, which is a plot element of this movie.
Okay.
And I think because of this controversy, actually, it's making a commentary on Asian people literally in this film being replaced with Caucasians. So I don't think it's something that the producers and the stars didn't know they were doing or making an example out of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it works the same way if you cast an Asian in that role. So there's your controversy.
I can't even name for you a famous Japanese actress.
Rinko Kikuchi.
I can't even name for you a famous Japanese actress, even now that you've told me that name. 99.999% of America has never heard of Rinko Kikuchi.
Well, they should. She's very good.
Okay.
Rinko Kikuchi?
Now,
close.
I'm not sure that Scarlett Johansson is a big enough star to open this movie.
Well, she opened
herself.
Lucy at number one, so I would say that she is. And you mentioned Lucy, and I mentioned Under the Skin. This movie does deal with, you know, Scarlett, her character, trying to figure out who was I before I was put in this shell.
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, yes, I'm really adept at killing a lot of people. My suit can make me invisible, but who am I really supposed to be? The person who made her, sort of the Frankenstein's mother, is Julia Binoche, who's just a great actress, and her character is paper thin, but she kind of elevates it because she's such a great actress.
Okay.
The antagonist is Michael Pitt. He's another great actor. So you have a really fine actors here. But the movie has questions that we've seen before in movies like Blade Runner. What does it mean to be alive or created? And of course, RoboCop is the main influence, I think, because RoboCop, in the course of that movie, Murphy realizes he's more human than machine. So this is what they're playing with in this movie.
Well, you're making it sound like an interesting and good action movie.
I think that it is both interesting and good. The action scenes are all very, it's not action heavy throughout, but the action scenes come in bursts and they're all really well staged. The special effects are at times next level special effects. We have a great city dystopia that reminds you of Blade Runner, giant holograms. It feels lived in, which is a hard thing to do. The reason why I'm not giving it a 10 though, the reason why I'm not clamoring for everybody to go out and see this is because if you're a science fiction fan or if you're an anime fan, you've seen this story before. Unfortunately, something that seems groundbreaking back in 95 might not be so groundbreaking now in 2017. Same thing happened when John Carter came out, which is a movie that I greatly enjoyed, and everybody said, well, that rips off Star Wars. Well, no, the story's 100 years old. It's just you've seen everything that ripped it off. So I think with Ghost in the Shell, the questions it raises and the themes it's dealing with don't seem so groundbreaking now because we've been doing that for, you know, 20-some years.
Say, you said you're not going to give it a 10. What are you going to give it?
I would give this one a solid 7. You know, a couple points up from average because the music score is great by Clint Mansell. He does a great job here. It's all very electronic and cold. And I think Scarlett's very good, too. It's a good movie. It's just not a great movie.
Okay. Ghost in the Shell gets a 7 from Max. Now some TV stuff I have to mention. Growing up, I was a huge fan of a comedian by the name of Robert Klein. In the 70s, there were three incredibly influential comedians: Richard Pryor, George Carlin, and Robert Klein. Pryor, of course, set a new standard for what comedy could be. Carlin, of course, the wordsmith, mm-hmm. who many, many people then imitated and followed. Robert Klein doesn't get nearly enough credit for what he was doing. He was really the first comedian of that generation to be the observational, smart comedian. The kind of guy who inspired people like Jerry Seinfeld and Billy Crystal and Bill Maher and Jon Stewart and even Jay Leno and Ray Romano and Larry Miller and those kind of comedians who took normal everyday life and turned it into a clever conversation and observations on stage. Robert Klein is 75 years old. He is still performing, but not very rarely. And last year, I heard that somebody had made a documentary about him called Robert Klein Still Can't Stop His Leg, which is based on one of his most famous routines that he did something like 45 years ago, where he plays the harmonica with a band behind him, and he starts singing a blues song called I Can't Stop My Leg. And he then did different versions of it on all of his specials. He did the first ever HBO stand-up comedy special in,
really?
I think, 1975, and wow. ended up doing a half dozen of them. Those, by the way, are still available. If you wanted to rent them and watch them, I don't know if they're streaming, but you can get those. Unfortunately, his original albums, Child of the 50s and Mind Over Matter and New Teeth, those were his three outstanding stand-up albums. They are long since out of print. But somebody made a documentary about him last year called Robert Klein Still Can't Stop His Leg, and it never played in St. Louis. And I wondered whether I would ever get a chance to see it. Well, I am going to get a chance to see it, and so are you. If you have Stars on your cable or satellite system, it's going to debut at 9 o'clock tonight, Central Time, and will probably run several times throughout the month because, you know, these cable channels, they got to fill up 24 hours a day, and they all have 8 different channels, Stars this, Stars that. This is on the main Stars channel tonight, but it'll rerun on the other ones, I'm sure, throughout the month of April. And all of those comedians who Robert Klein influenced are going to be in this movie talking about him, and you'll get to see him doing some stand-up and some stuff from his history as well. If you're a Klein fan, you may want to check that out. Speaking of comedians, Louis C.K. has a new stand-up special that's coming out on Netflix on Tuesday. It's called Louis C.K. 2017. And what's interesting to me about this is, just a few years ago, we were talking about how Louis C.K. was changing the paradigm for stand-up comedians by producing and distributing his own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He would have a crew come, shoot one of his concerts, and they would put it up on his website, and you could download it and own it for
$5. Yes.
Well, and he made, I think, off the first one of those, he made $1 million in about 2 days.
A mint. Yes.
And then he started actually distributing other people's stuff, Tig Notaro and some other people. And now, of course, he's involved in producing, what, 3 or 4 different TV shows? And he made a deal with Netflix, just like all these others. We talked last week about Dave Chappelle.
They must be offering some good money.
Jerry Seinfeld has one coming out in a couple of months. Chris Rock has one coming out soon. So Louis C.K.'s special is out Tuesday. If you have Netflix, you can actually add it to your list now, and then it'll automatically appear in the queue come Tuesday. And then while I'm talking about TV-related stuff, last night I was flicking around and ended up on HBO, which has that show Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. Which, for my money, you could take the with Brian Gumbel out of it, because he just introduces the pieces. And then he sits at the end and asks the person who did the story one or two questions, and that's it. But he still has that I'm Brian Gumbel arrogance. You know, as if I'm the star of this show. No, it's the reporters who go out and do these stories. It would be like if you had a host for 60 Minutes. I guess you could say that this is what CBS Sunday Morning always has been. First with Charles Kuralt, and then with Charles Osgood, and now with Jane Pauley. You don't need those people. It's the stories that make up the show. Well, I watched it last night, and I happened to get on it just as they were starting a piece, and I don't remember the reporter's name, but the piece was about Rick Ankiel, who has a book coming out about his problems being able to throw the ball to the catcher. Remember we went through that here in, was that 2000?
About 99, I remember.
Somewhere around there, where he was a rookie and he was the hottest guy in the the Cardinals organization, and Tony La Russa loved him, and he was doing great, and it was in the postseason, and then all of a sudden, instead of throwing it to the catcher, I guess it was Mike Matheny at that time, I don't know.
May have been.
You know, he was instead throwing it to the screen. And so he's got a book that's coming out in a few weeks called The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life. And the story really goes in-depth with Ankiel and his mom, who talks about how devastating this was. She, you know, she raised a kid who became a major league star in his rookie season. As great as that is for him, imagine being the parent of that child who brought you along, you know, paid for all your baseball practices, drove you to games, all that sort of
and
stuff.
And you are the guy.
And you're the guy. And then it falls apart. And then she gets the call from Rick, and she tells us in the piece about the one day where he's been out of baseball, and he says, "Mom, I'm going back into baseball." And she's like, "Oh, no, Ricky, don't. I've been there for all of this, and it's been torture. Where are you going to start? What are you going to do?" And he tells her that, "I'm going back to the lowest level, A-level ball in the Cardinals organization, and I'm going to be an outfielder," which meant he had to learn to hit because, you know, no major league pitchers are hitters. Maybe they can bunt. That's about all they can do. And then he gets in there, and you see the story, and there's that great moment where it's his first game back, where he finally works his way up through the minors and works his way back up into the majors. And his first game back, I don't think it's his first at-bat, but maybe his second or third at-bat, he jerks one into the right field seats. But even before that happened, what was amazing about it was, and they show this in here, and this is something that St. Louis, I believe, continues to be unique about in the baseball world. Here's a guy who had become a disgrace and had been almost laughed out of Major League Baseball. And when he was re-announced, because Cardinal fans are so smart about this sort of thing and so sympathetic and empathetic, he got a standing ovation as he walked from the dugout to the plate for his first at-bat back in the league. And that footage is included in this piece.
Oh, very cool.
So it's on HBO, and again, like the Stars thing with Robert Klein, it's going to run multiple times this month. It's the latest Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. But look for it and watch that. If you're a Cardinals fan especially, I really, really think you'll enjoy
it. The one thing I remember about that, he was playing center field too. I believe it may have been in Florida, but I can't be certain. But it was Rick Ankiel caught a ball, I believe, in towards the wall. He was on the warning track and threw a strike, no bounce or anything, to third base.
Yes. The footage is in there.
Oh, yeah. He had a cannon.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
The footage is in this piece.
Yeah.
And he catches the guy by a step.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really remarkable story.
An incredible arm.
If I can, I'm going to try to get Rick on the show to talk about it sometime.
Oh, that'd be great.
After the
book comes out. Any other movie-related stuff we have to get to today, Max?
Not that I've got.
Okay.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them hits Blu-ray and DVD this week. And I guess if you're a Harry Potter fan and you missed this one, it's the ninth overall Harry Potter film.
But it's not really a Harry Potter movie, or is it?
Oh, it is. It takes place in the 20s. And Harry Potter himself was not born until, I think, 89 or so. So it's a generation before him. But yes, you'll recognize some of the names that throw around.
Okay. Other movie-related stuff I have on my desktop here. There will no longer be any Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator movies. Not only has he been terminated from Celebrity Apprentice, but that last movie that they did, Terminator Genesis, which I thought was so bad.
I didn't think it was the worst Terminator film. Salvation.
Those are both horrible. They're both horrible. But they thought, well, we can bring it back, and with computer technology, we can do stuff with Arnold and show you. It did not do well at the box office. They have announced it is the end of the line. They're not going to do any. Now,
I'm fine with that.
Now, they're saying that now, but I guarantee you that 10 to 15 years from now, which will probably be after Arnold Schwarzenegger is dead, somebody's going to come back and say, you know what? We could do a new Terminator movie with the technology that we have now and try to create a new franchise and a new star. And who's to say that they won't be able to turn that into a hit? It's all going to be based on the story. Well, Terminator Genesis was too much about, ooh, Arnold is back, which he hasn't been in the previous one. I don't think anybody's going to care, but we'll see what happens a decade from now.
It's kind of like Rogue One. The Star Wars story, where they brought back an actor to be Grand Moff Tarkin. It was Peter Cushing.
Yes.
And they had an actor on set performing the whole role and doing this best Peter Cushing voice. Yes. And then they superimposed a CG Cushing face, and it looked pretty great. Who's to say they couldn't do that with Arnold 20 years from now?
Also coming back later this year, Cash Cab. Remember that show? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah.
The reruns were on, what was it, Discovery?
Yeah, wasn't that a game show in a cab or something?
It was in New York. If people would get
it always made me uncomfortable. If I got into a cab and the whistles and the bells started going off, and when he asked you questions, I'd be so out of there. But it would scare me.
You would have that option. What I liked about it was, if you got three questions wrong, he pulled the cab over and you had to get out.
Right then. I know.
Imagine like, that. Wait a minute. You hail a cab, you're in a hurry. Okay, while we're on the ride, I'll answer your questions and play along with your game. What do you mean I have to get out?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know the answers to your questions.
This is not a good neighborhood.
The guy who was the original cash cabbie, Ben Bailey, is not going to be involved, but they're going to do a new version of that coming back later this year. And the last thing I want to mention is two movies that I loved last year and actually had in my top 10 for the year are now available on Amazon Prime Video. They are streaming, but they are not on Netflix. One of them is called Lion, which Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman were nominated for, but it's the little kid who's in the first half of the movie who's really the star and was fantastic.
He's great.
Sonny Pawar is his name, and he's just terrific. And the other one is Miss Sloane, a movie that I and eight other people saw, but I really, really enjoyed.
I'm one of those eight.
You liked it?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
Okay.
But I liked it. She is very good in it. Jessica Chastain's very good
as a lobbyist in Washington, and there are all sorts of sleazeballs around her.
Good twists and turns toward the end.
I agree. So both of those are now streaming, as well as Hidden Figures, which I'm going to have on my top 10 list for this year. If you haven't seen it, all three of those are now on Amazon Prime Video. And that's all of our showbiz stuff for this week. Coming up in the next hour, the Harris Challenge, Mike Evans, and of course, this week's batch of knuckleheads in the news here on the Big 550 KTRS.